Democrat James Carville once described Pennsylvania as Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in the middle. Political analysts and editorials refer to central Pennsylvania as the T in statewide elections. Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Scranton, and Wilkes-Barre generally vote for Democratic candidates. While the majority of the counties in the central part of the state vote Republican, as a result, maps showing the outcomes of statewide elections invariably form a T shape. We're calling this podcast the T, but that doesn't mean we're taking an editorial stance, either right or left. We'll let you decide that. I'm Emma Ganader, the Daily Item social media editor. And now our host, Daily Item political reporter, Rick Dandies.
My guest today is Chris Ellis, an associate professor of political science at Bucknell University in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. And Chris is one of the most astute observers of domestic politics that I've ever met. Chris, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You know, they say, I guess we're going to be talking about the debate on Monday. And I was reading the Hill magazine, and they said that they say that up to 100 million people might possibly tune in, making it comparable to a typical Super Bowl. Certainly it would be the most watched presidential debate to this point. So what do you expect? Do you expect Trump to be Trump? Do you expect Hillary to try to be more, open and trustworthy? What do you expect?
I mean, I certainly think Trump will be Trump because I'm not sure there's anything else at this point. I don't think he can try to be someone else even to pretend for a little while. The more, I guess, interesting question is what Hillary Clinton decides to do, right? I mean, the obvious path that presidential candidates play in debates like this is to just play it safe and to recite their talking points and not take too many risks and just sort of be out there and be normal, and that's usually the way this works. Trump's obviously going to not do that, so I'm going to be interested to see whether she decides to take that bait and enter the sort of knife fight with him, or if she decides to kind of stay above the fray and not do those sorts of things. Now, some other Republicans decided to take the bait in the primary debates, and it didn't work out too well for them, so maybe she's learned from that and will try to sort of stay away from those sorts of things and just sort of talk about the things she normally talks about. But if she doesn't, we could be in for quite a show.
Yeah, I think his opponents in the primary debates almost proved that you can't out-Trump Trump.
Yeah, there's no way you can do that. And I think it would probably be a mistake for her to try. I mean, I'm sure she has a team of psychologists working on trying to figure out how to bait him to say something he'll regret or really get him angry and start babbling or whatever. But there's a risk in that, right? And the risk is you end up sort of looking like Marco Rubio did. You look like you're fighting a battle that you can't possibly win.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if he's going to try to stay on point. I'm not sure he can for any great length of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think this format is going to hurt him, I think, compared to the primary debates. I've been saying things are going to hurt him for about a year now, and I've been wrong almost every time. But this time I think I'm right. And the reason that is because if there's 10 candidates on stage, right, almost as important as what you say is just being seen. And he was able to get, one, more time than any of the other candidates in the 10 debates, and two, was able to sort of get more of the memorable lines, right? So even if sort of pundits and kind of the intellectual class kind of panned his performance, for voters who weren't really paying attention, yeah, I mean, we knew who that guy was, and the other candidates sort of faded into the background. That's going to be harder here. I mean, one, because there's only two candidates, and they'll both be on TV for a long time. And two, because the conversations will be longer, so you won't be able to do the sort of get in, get out, say something memorable, and move on. There'll be more discussions of substance. And that's, frankly, where he was the weakest in the primary debates. So a lot of the strategies, I think, worked really well for him, which is make sure you're the center of attention, make sure that you're saying things that people are going to know, make sure people recognize you and not your opponents. That's not necessarily going to work as well this time.
Now, a lot of pressure on the moderator, Lester Holt.
Yeah, a little bit. So he can take one of two tacks, right? Either one is he's sort of really aggressive in fact-checking and catching people in obvious lies and things like that. And the other way is to sort of stay out as much as possible and sort of regulate time and things like that. And I think he'll be under some pressure to sort of go the fact-checking route after kind of the, you know, the beating Matt Lauer took in the press for sort of not calling Trump on some of his more obvious lies. But sometimes voters learn a little bit more if you don't do that, right? And you sort of just sit back and let the candidates talk and save some of the more in-depth evaluation of their claims until it's over.
Chris, historically, are presidential debates really relevant?
Historically, they don't matter very much. And that's maybe what makes this one a little bit different, is that typically what happens is the candidates are so tight and so scripted and so on message that there's not a whole lot of room to move voters. And to the extent they do, it's sort of temporary, right? That we saw in 2012, Barack Obama was tired for the first one.
Yeah.
Right, and sort of people made a big deal of that, and he fell in the polls for a little while. But then he gained almost all of that back, right? It's not the kind of thing. I mean, even some of the iconic ones that we sort of remember, like the Reagan-Mondale, I mean, those elections were sort of – we sort of knew where those were headed anyway. This one may be different, right, in the sense that, you know, one, the tone and style is certainly going to be different than anything we've seen in a presidential debate, at least in the TV era. And two, I mean, I think the dynamics of the election are just different, that – it's pretty clear sort of from my reading of the polls that swing voters are really looking for any reason to not vote for Hillary Clinton because they don't like her and don't trust her. And then every time they seem to be coming around to Trump, he does something that makes them say, oh, God, no way, no way. And so I think, you know, if he's able to – now it's a big question of whether he can do this – but if he's able to sort of clear the hurdle with some moderate voters of, you know, I would actually maybe trust this guy with the job – I think that would be a pretty big deal. Now, if he sort of goes on and kind of makes a fool of himself and sort of embarrasses himself, then it could go the other way, right, and sort of pull away some of his more peripheral supporters that he's been getting recently. But I think, no, if he can sort of just cross that basic bar, even if he doesn't win the debate, quote-unquote, but just sort of cross the basic bar of, oh, this guy's not as horrifying as I thought he might be, I mean, in this sort of election cycle, that may be enough.
And she has to – her challenge is the likability issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's obviously well ahead on sort of perceived qualifications and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, you know, she has to be someone voters can like, but I think maybe even more than that, she has to be someone voters who can trust. I mean, I think, you know, likability is sort of baked into the cake at some point. And given who her opponent is, I don't think she needs to be – you know, super personable to kind of win that battle either. But she needs to be, just like Trump sort of needs to be seen as competent, she needs to be seen as someone that we can sort of, oh, that person's not going to just tell habitual lies, right? Now, Trump sort of does that too, but it's been so much of a persona of the Clinton name basically for 20 years that's probably going to be her battle to clear.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us. The Tea is hosted by Daily Item political reporter Rick Dandies and produced by me, Daily Item social media editor Emma Ganader. We would like to thank Dr. Chris Ellis of Bucknell University for his time. Instrumental music is The Bugle Feature, Attenberg's Concerto from The Handel Show, as performed by the U.S. Army Old Guard Fife and Drum Corps. Music is provided by the freemusicarchive.org. According to the website, the recording is in the public domain. Finally, I would like to say thank you to our editor, Dennis Lyons, for supporting this podcast, and audioboom.com for hosting us. You can subscribe to this podcast on audioboom.com or iTunes. Thank you.